Program, Mike Malloy here on the NoVem Radio Network. This has been a four-day work week, and it seems like it's been a 24-day work week. This is just I don't know. I don't know about you folks, but I am wrung out. I've had it. I've had enough, man. We will get through tonight, though. We're going to talk a little bit about a little bit more about the gruesome twosome, McCain and the lipsticked Pitbull, but this is kind of interesting. I have to lead off with this because I just got it right before the program. Scott Richter, who is Todd Palin's former business partner, this afternoon filed an emergency motion with the court in Juneau or wherever to seal his divorce papers. It's all over. Matter of fact, well, did we put that up? Yeah, we've got it up. You can have you put it up yet, Kathy? Okay, we'll have it up. You can go to the court records in the court in Alaska, courtrecords.alaska.gov, whatever, and the docket number, everything is up there. You can take a look at it yourself. Now, I don't know if the motion was denied. It's hard for me to read this kind of court legalese, but motion was filed to make the case file confidential, Scott Richter's divorce papers. Now, inquiring minds want to know why. Oh, God, this just gets worse and worse. Anyway, we'll keep that one on the front burner. Bob Woodward has a new book out. It's entitled The War Within, A Secret White House History, 2006 to 2008. Some of the revelations in Bob Woodward's new book was published or were published in the Washington Post today. And some of this is pretty astonishing. It's well, first of all, what made the news the headline part, what made the news, the headline part, the Bush administration has spied on Nouri al-Maliki, the Iraqi prime minister, and other senior figures in his government. We spy on them because obviously we don't trust him. We wanted, who is that freak, that Iraqi, Shalabi is the ones that the neocons wanted to be the leader of Iraq, because, you know, you might call him Mr. 20%. As long as he gets 20% of everything, things will go according to the Cheney plan. But he didn't make it. Nouri al-Maliki was elected prime minister. So we immediately start to spy on him. Now, this is just one of many claims in this new book by Bob Woodward. He says the book is based on more than 150 interviews with key figures in the Iraq War, as well as two interviews with Bush. And the book paints a picture, according to the Post, of Bush often going off on a tangent completely against what his military advisors and other officials tell him to do. Remember, Bush is doing this because God talks to this psycho son of a bitch, right? But when you've heard Bush talk about, well, I listen to my commanders on the ground, no, he doesn't. He doesn't at all. Not a bit. Woodward also says that it wasn't the surge of 30,000 additional troops that resulted in the lessening of violence. It was groundbreaking surveillance techniques. And what that means, although I don't know if Woodward says this, but it's kind of leaking out from bloggers in Iraq and people who know a lot more about this than you and I do at this point, that because of those groundbreaking surveillance techniques, it was easy, relatively speaking, to slip in and assassinate insurgents. Now, I'm not talking about Al-Qaeda. I don't know and don't care if they were Al-Qaeda. These are people who are trying to get us out of their country, of whatever their motives were. Maybe they're just rapists, murderers, Muslims who want to, eat Christians. I don't know. I don't care. But they were targeted and eliminated. Now, not only that, also the stand down by Muqtada al-Sadr and his powerful Mahdi army. It's my understanding there's 100,000 soldiers in the Mahdi army that could be and will be brought out once the U.S. Either leaves or the Iraqis decided they've had enough of this garbage. 100,000 fighters on their own soil. Now, let's keep in mind what the North Vietnamese did to 600,000 American fighters on their soil. You can't win against an insurgency. It just can't be done. I defy anyone to give me an example. I mean from modern history. Ask the French. Ask them about Algeria. Ask anybody who is well-versed on insurgencies against occupying forces. Who ultimately wins? Unless it's a situation like Tibet and China, which hasn't... there are extreme situations where you have 1.2 billion person nation absorbing, swallowing a country like Tibet. That's something else again. But I'm talking about an invader like us in so many instances, like the British, like the Russians. The Russians had their asses handed to them in Afghanistan. The British, 150 years before that, had their asses handed to them in Afghanistan, as are we. It's just a matter of time. These kinds of invasions and occupations and fighting against insurgencies just are not successful for the invader. They're just not. I mean, Jesus, God. So one of the reasons for the other reason was what was called the Anbar Awakening, so-called, in which Sunni fighters allied with U.S. forces to fight against al-Qaeda, again, targeted key individuals and extremist groups. Mostly Shia, had nothing to do, again, maybe it did, I don't know, I don't care, with al-Qaeda. Had to do, this is a massive, multi-faced or faceted civil war that's going on in Iraq and has been going on for a number of years. George Herbert Walker Bush, after his invasion, exhorted the Sunnis to rise, or the Shia to rise up, which they did. And there was a slaughter, and we did nothing. Saddam's forces slaughtered these people. This is just like the way we told the Georgians, go ahead, invade Ossetia, we'll be right behind you. And then we had a meeting to attend or whatever. My schedule was full. I had to go to a PTA meeting, you know. I'm the head of the PTA! Or, oh, God, don't start. So here we are, the war within, secret White House history, 2006. To 2008, and Bob Woodward says the surge smurge. It was surveillance techniques, the stand down of the Mahdi army, the Sunni fighters targeting key individuals and extremist groups. And this is based on interview. This is not Bob Woodward. He doesn't go to Iraq and interview people. He interviews people within our government, 150 plus Bush. And this is the result. Now, in 2006, when Bush was maintaining publicly that U.S. forces were winning, privately, he was telling his inner circle that the strategy of training Iraq's security forces and transferring responsibility to the new government, Maliki's government, was failing. See, everything that comes out of the mouth of a Republican politician is a filthy lie. That even this psychotic bitch Palin, who said she sold an airplane on eBay. That turns out to be a lie. These pigs lie about everything, whether it's a war or how our troops are being treated when they come home or whether or not she sells an airplane on eBay. All of it is lies. Everything. Everything comes out of their mouth. Woodward says in his book that Bush lost confidence in General George Casey, who was the commander of coalition forces in Iraq, and then General John Abizaid, who was the head of U.S. Central Command. Why? Because they both told him, it's not going to work. We don't need a surge. We need to do something else. In October 2006, Bush asked his national security advisor, Stephen Hadley, to carry out a review of the Iraq War. But the report ignored the military. Ignored the military. Who did Hadley talk to? The inner circle of neocons, including Dick Cheney and the rest of these rat bastards. The military was left out of a review of a war, for Christ's sake. And the results of the review were kept secret for fear of jeopardizing the Republican Party's ability to win those midterm congressional elections. I mean, this is how bad the Republicans are. So they trot this bouffant bitch out of Alaska and put her up there in America, and so far it's working. It's working. People are sitting back on their haunches going, you know, I like her. She's really cool. She's really neat. Jesus God. The Pentagon finally reluctantly agreed to a troop surge of two brigades. The White House decided, Bush and Cheney, or Cheney, decided no, five. Now, asked how this decision was reached, Bush told Bob Woodward, quote, okay, I don't know this. I'm not in these meetings. You'll be happy to hear it because I got other things to do, end quote. I don't know. Do you understand what this psychopathic little drunk is saying? Major decisions that involve the murder of thousands of people, not to mention the just the catastrophic wounding of American soldiers and the deaths of American soldiers. And this son of a bitch says, well, I wasn't there. I don't know. I got other things to do. I'm a war president. Woodward says General Casey described the 2007 surge as a troop sump. And Casey told a colleague that Bush reflected, quote, the radical wing of the Republican Party that keeps saying, kill the bastards, and you'll succeed, end quote. The war president.
No, don't do that. Oh, don't do that. It takes a lifetime to learn what's in the rest. Why are we all fighting? Huh? Why do we keep on lighting these fires, these bombs? We don't know what's gone wrong. Forgetting where we've come from. And all of this violence is killing me.
Regret, I have to tell you right away, been war. I never wanted to be a war president.
Yeah, okay. 24 past the hour, we're talking about Bob Woodward's new book, The War Within, A Secret White House History, 2006 to 2008. Some little gems from the book were published in the Washington Post today. Among those gems, the U.S. has been spying on our puppet prime minister, Nouri al-Maliki, and other senior officials in his government. Bush maintained U.S. forces were winning in 2006, while privately believing that everything was going to hell. It just goes on and on. General Casey, who Bush more or less fired, at least took him out of control. Casey was at one time the commander of coalition forces in Iraq. And Casey told a colleague that Bush reflected the radical wing of the Republican Party that kept saying, kill the bastards, and you'll succeed. That's what Bob Woodward writes. The book also says that the Joint Chiefs of Staff were in near revolt in late 2006. Do you understand that? Near revolt. With Admiral Michael Mullen, then serving as Chief of Naval Operations, fearing the military would, quote, take the fall, end quote, for failure in Iraq. Now, what does near revolt mean? What does that mean? Does it mean that they were going to stop following the civilian chain of command from the president, allegedly from the president, to the Secretary of Defense, to the military, to the Joint Chiefs, and then down through the ranks? Is that what they're saying? They were going to stop? They were going to commit an or participate in an insurrection themselves, a mutiny? Is that what is being said here? It's just astonishing. Back to the spying on al-Maliki, the Washington Post writes, while Bush developed a close relationship with Maliki, U.S. officials feared the impact the surveillance of the prime minister would have, according to Woodward. A source told Woodward, quote, "We know everything he says." Well, the news came out today that the Maliki government is pissed, thoroughly pissed. So what the Bush crime family has done in the first place, the invasion for no reason, the occupation that has resulted in all this death and destruction, everything, I'll tell you, if the Obama administration does what the Clinton administration did and allows these criminal sons of bitches to walk, then, that'll be the end of the line for me. And if I'm still alive and still doing talk radio 4 years from now, please don't anybody say to me or send me emails about, oh, Mike, well, you're a Democrat. Don't be a traitor to the cause. 4 years from now, hell, most of us could be dead by then. So it really doesn't matter. But not in the long run, it doesn't. So we are left with a stark reality, if you've had any doubt, that everything about this invasion and occupation has been a lie. It's been worse than a lie. It has been trickery to put the United States in a state of war that has resulted in pretty much the end of this republic. And George Bush did it.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. All right, regarding the only reason I talk about this is because, you know, the Republicans present themselves as family value types, some of this other garbage, and especially this Palin woman. But as far as, you know, who is Boykin, who and her family, bottom line, I really don't care, except insofar as it exposes the hypocrisy and the lies of these pigs. But the motion to seal the divorce records of Palin's husband's business partner, the motion to seal those records apparently was denied. And as Kathy writes in from Green Bay, the National Enquirer publishes this Tuesday. So now, over at Daily Coast, they have a lot of stuff up about this, and a lot of comments, as you can imagine, saying, what the hell does this have to do with anything? And you can make a very cogent argument that has nothing to do with anything, except for the fact that the right-wing bobbleheads, Republicans, and the you know, the people who've had their bodies snatched, the evangelicals and the Armageddonists, are just enthralled with this woman. So that's why it makes a difference. Maybe if the facade of this garbage is ripped away and these Alaskan hillbillies can be exposed for what they are, maybe the bobbleheads will go, oh, okay, well, I think I'll go home and not vote this year, which would be a good thing, because then that will spell doom for this corrupt, filthy, degenerate Republican Party. That's why it matters to me. Now, over at Daily Coast, some of the comments describe this as, what's the one I'm looking for? I know what it was. The court records, according to people who were up there, what was sealed or not sealed, the divorce records, are simply the divorce records of Scott Palin's business partner, and that the business partner was boinking somebody on Palin's governor's staff, and Palin's husband stepped in and fired the woman, and then it got out, and they got a, you know, this is madness. This is this is so cheesy. This is like something, no offense to my compatriots here in the great state of Georgia, but this is like something out of the hills up here, out of the mountains, back in one of these little jerk-ass towns where they have to truck in the daylight. That's what this reminds me of. Well, did you hear who was boinking who? I mean, in a town like Wasilla, where you have 9 people, if somebody sleeps with somebody, Jesus God, it's probably their cousin, if not a relative of some sort. Ah. And the McCain stormtroopers vetted her, interviewed her. Yeah, okay, sure they did. Now, the other thing about this cretinous woman, and this is Washington Post and ABC, and or not ABC, but MSNBC, all over the place now, so I'm going to mention it too. One of the compelling anecdotes about Sarah Palin, of course, was that she had auctioned off the Alaska governor's jet on eBay after taking office. You know, was that Governor Murkowski? Was that who it was? Another Republican filth bag. But the facts are the jet didn't sell on eBay. It was sold to a businessman named Larry Reynolds, who paid $2.1 million for the jet. The original cost was $2.7 million. Now, there was a story in the Times about this, too. New York Times. I'm getting this from the Post. Dan Spencer, the director of administrative service for Alaska's Public Safety Department, said that the Republican Speaker of the Alaska House, John Harris, brokered the deal to this guy named Larry Reynolds, a businessman from Valdez. Now, the kicker is that Reynolds made campaign contributions to both Palin and Harris in 2006 and 2007. So the Speaker of the House, John Harris, and the governor, Sarah Palin, had this guy who contributes money to their campaigns, and his name is Larry Reynolds. So when Palin takes over, Larry Reynolds wants a jet plane. Well, I'll be goddamned. Here's one. Looky here. What's it worth? $2.7 million. I'll give you $2.1 million. Okay, you got a deal. You see why the sale of the airplane and who in the Palin family is carrying whose baby and who's boinking who and whether or not the divorce records are sealed or not, why it does matter. It does matter. Because the McCain campaign should be ripped off the planet, thrown into some deep, dark hole, and forgotten about. And this is a way to do it. Now, I understand Hartman is and some other people have been talking about how much longer before Palin is dropped from the ticket for, she's got to go home and take care of her kids, whatever the excuse is. So what happened with the airplane? According to the Washington Post, after putting it up to auction, there was one serious bid in December 2006, and it fell through. 8 months later, the airplane, a Westwind II, was sold. And it was sold to a campaign contributor who gave money to Sarah Palin and the Alaska Speaker of the House, John Harris, and it was Harris who brokered the deal. Hello! Can you take a deep breath through your nose? Smell the stench? Yeah, that's a Republican. You smell that stink? It follows Republicans wherever they go. God, now McCain, being the senile, whatever he is, I mean, that's right, he's a POW. He declared at a campaign stop in Wisconsin today, quote, "You know what I enjoyed the most, my friends? She took the luxury jet that was acquired by her predecessor and sold it on eBay and made a profit." What is he talking about a profit? It was sold at a $600,000 loss to a political operative, by a political operative, who had given money to both the Speaker of the Alaska House and Governor Palin. And McCain is standing up there. You know, McCain ought to leave this alone, which he would do if it weren't for the fact that he's a crazed, senile Republican. He doesn't know which hand to wipe himself with. This guy is out of control. You should leave the story alone, John. You really should. Now, it's not just McCain. Last night, you remember the video tribute to Palin that aired at the convention? That video tribute made the same claim. She signed sweeping ethics reform legislation, auctioned the governor's jet on eBay, and on, citing a list of Palin's accomplishments. Everything they say is a lie. Everything. Everything. Whether it's about airplanes or who's screwing who or war or unemployment figures or the importance of minimum wage or whether or not corporations are paying taxes, everything that comes out of the mouth of a Republican official is a lie. And everything that rattles around inside the brain of a Republican voter is poison. And the poor Republican voter is so ignorant, so willfully ignorant, that the voter would just sit there and say, yeah, well, she's really shaking things up. Boy, I like her. She's got a great she really makes sense, doesn't she? Oh, boy, I really like her. She's going to be the next vice president. We sure are lucky. Is it time to go to church yet? Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. Kathy writes, somebody in the McCain campaign today said that this election isn't about issues, it's about character. Okay, let's make it about character then. Here you have a guy, John McCain, who cheats on his first wife. Once he comes back from his, well, he was a POW, Mike, for Christ's sake, comes back and sees that she has been altered because of a car wreck. So he cheats on her. He commits adultery. Then you got eventually marries her. Then you have over here a group of hillbillies from Alaska who lie, cheat, steal, screw each other, and eat methamphetamines. And it's about character? And who have conversations with God about building a pipeline. And it's about character. Okay. That's why it's important. Now, the other story that's out there, it's out tonight, it's from the LA Progressive. According to the author who quotes, now you can take this with as much of grain of salt or a busload of salt as you want. A woman named Lucille, a waitress who is part Aboriginal who lives in Alaska, talked with the writer here, Charlie James, at the LA Progressive. She only wants her first name used because she's afraid that she's frightened of being discovered and, then murdered. And I'll tell you what she had to say when we come back. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy.
Do not go gently into that good night. Rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
And before the hour, we have a little breaking news here from Prairie 2, and then I'll get back to the garbage. We're trying to get the garbage out as quickly as we can so we can move on to things that are truly important on an essential level. This stuff is important on a non-essential level, but and by essential, I mean essence of, I mean foundational. And this Republican ticket has got to be flushed down the toilet along with the rest of the garbage. But here's the breaking news from Prairie 2. A Friday is bank seizing day. The conventions are over, and notice the Republicans didn't talk about the economy. The feds are preparing to seize both Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. The central banks of China, Japan, and Saudi Arabia hold most of the bonds on these two banks. In most seizures, the investors take a bath. Care to bet that doesn't happen this time? I read something New York Times, I think 2 days ago in the business section, about just what Prairie 2 is writing about, and it was just as vague. Another report today is that China is starting to realize that all those treasury notes they bought are not worth a tinker's damn. They're worth about 60% of their face value at this point, and the Chinese are, how to put this, pissed. Because their people, the Chinese oligarchs, are telling the leadership, the communist leadership, we've been had. We've been taken for a ride. And probably not a good idea to piss off both Russia and China at the same time, but that's what the Bush crime family is doing. Maybe it is in their bloody, sick quest for the rapture. You think? Now, that's kind of a breaking story. We'll have more on it as we get more. L.A. Progressive, Charlie James, he starts out with the quote from Sarah Palin, according to Lucille. So Sambo beat the bitch. Now, the reference is Barack Obama defeating Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary. So Sambo beat the bitch. Now, according to L.A. Progressive newspaper, this is how Sarah Palin described Barack Obama's win over Hillary Clinton to political colleagues in a restaurant a few days after Obama locked up the Democratic Party presidential nomination. According to Lucille, the waitress serving her table at the time and who asked that her last name not be used, Governor Palin was eating lunch with five or six people when the subject of the Democrats' primary battle came up. The governor, seemingly not caring that people at nearby tables would likely hear her utter the slur, and then laughed loudly as her meal mates joined in appreciatively. It was kind of disgusting, said Lucille, who is part Aboriginal, said in a phone interview after admitting that she is frightened of being discovered, telling folks in the so-called lower 48 about life near the North Pole. Then, almost with a sigh, she added, but that's just Alaska. Racial and ethnic slurs may be just Alaska, and clearly they are common everyday chatter for Palin. And the article goes on. She refers to Alaska's Aboriginal people as Arctic Arabs or effing Eskimos, according to a number of Alaskans and people in Wasilla who were interviewed for the article. The writer, Charlie James, goes on, but being openly racist is only the tip of the Palin iceberg. According to Alaskans interviewed for this article, she is also vindictive and mean. We're talking Rove mean and Nixon vindictive. No wonder the vast sea of white cheering faces at the Republican convention went wild for Sarah. They adore the type. It's in their genetic code. So much for McCain's pledge of a high road campaign. Palin is incapable of being part of one. We have this up too, don't we? The LA Reader story. Okay, did you put those up yet? Okay, you can go to my website now and download this if you want to. An insurance agent in Anchorage who knows the Palin family explained, quote, the GOP is kind of like organized crime up here. It's corrupt and arrogant. They're all rich because they do private sweetheart deals with the oil companies, and they can destroy anyone, and they will if they have to. And it just goes on and on. It's a lengthy article, a very long article. So Take a look. Why does it matter what comes out of the mouth of this woman? Because given McCain's five bouts of cancer and the fact that his mind is going very quickly, if the Republicans win the presidency, she could be the president. I didn't put that sentence together, did I? Did I just say that she could be the president? Oh my God. Bob in La Habra, California writes, Mike, I have to tell you, the other night when the broad was talking, I guess he means Palin giving her acceptance speech, you had me in stitches. I love it. This woman is an absolutely useless person. Can someone tell me what she has done for other people? She lives in a state with the biggest handouts from the feds, bigger than any other state. Someone should, well, I don't know that that's completely true, but it's between the feds and the oil companies. You're right, Bob. Someone should blast her for ridiculing a man who tried to help needy people. This woman is a disgrace, as well as being dishonest. So much for her Christian morality. Someone asked the other day, was Christ an executive or a community organizer? I do admit I'm a Christian, but I don't practice it very well. Bob. Oh, here it is. Mike, the central bank of China is being backed into a corner. In the last 7 years, they bought $1 trillion worth of U.S. Treasury and Freddie Mac bonds. And with the collapsing dollar, they're having a hard time paying their bills. China no longer has any illusions about the U.S. dollar and is increasingly viewing China's dollar investments as a loss. A best-selling book in China is titled Currency War and accuses the U.S. of knowingly selling China worthless bonds. There's more here. I'll finish it up when we come back. This is from Prairie 2 also. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. Molloy Show on Nova M. We're going to come to your phone calls in a moment. I want to go back to this this thing I was reading. It was also from Prairie 2 about the Central Bank of China being backed into a corner because in the last 7 years they've bought $1 trillion worth of U.S. Treasury and Freddie Mac bonds. Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae are about to... I mean, we've all been warned about this, haven't we? That it's been very low-key, the warnings about, well, you know, the government. The government may have to step in with a limited, modified kind of hangout bailout for Fannie Mae, Fannie Mac, and Freddie Moo, or whatever the hell it is. I never really have understood why those two semi-public companies exist anyway. I guess they're not even that anymore. They're stock companies. Everyone believes they're government entities. They are not. It's my understanding they have about $4 or $5 trillion worth of mortgages. If they go belly up, look for this economy to sink. Very simply, it's gone. So if you haven't laid in your supply of bottled water, I know you're not supposed to do that anymore. Well, if you want a drink, you better do it. And dried rice and beans and stuff, you know, maybe it's a good time to do it. Wait a minute, we heard all this about Y2K, right? Remember Y2K? Remember why? Jesus Christ. Anyway, a best-selling book in China is titled Currency War and accuses the U.S. of knowingly selling China worthless bonds. The Bush crime family has been selling off our infrastructure, but China has lost an estimated 40% on investments it has bought here, and it's becoming wary. Meanwhile, Brazil is close to completing several highway links across Peru, which will allow it to trade directly with China. They are planning for a truckload of soybeans crossing Peru every 25 seconds. There is nothing we sell to China that they can't buy from Brazil cheaper. So in the future, Brazil will trade agricultural and forest products for manufactured goods from China and trade that for oil from Venezuela. Iran will do their banking, and the Russian Navy provides security. And the vast wasteland that used to be the U.S. does not have any part to play. You know, we've been in control of everything since the late 1890s, since we got involved in the Spanish-American War and started the American Empire. We've been in control of everything. There is no telling how many people have died because they got in the way of American empire and American corporate interests and American quest and demand for raw materials from countries that had nothing to export except raw materials. But the jig is up, folks. It really, really is up. We're going to become like Britain, or maybe France, or maybe Portugal, or maybe the Netherlands. You know, these were massive colonial empires at one time. Massive. And what are they now? Little countries scattered around Europe trying desperately, and the British Isles trying desperately to not sink underneath the tide of immigrants, low wages, cheap goods, mass-produced, globalization. You know, not to be a naysayer, or because we can survive this, we can figure out how to do this. We really can. I mean, there's no reason we can't. But the idea of American empire and us being in charge, we've been in charge for 150 years. Is that right? 150? Yeah, roughly. I don't know. We're not in charge anymore. All right, 110. We're not in charge anymore. We are not. There are emerging economies that are going to dwarf us, going to make us, it's going to be like comparing our economy to I don't know, Ghana's. And those economies, whether it's India or China or Brazil or Russia. Yeah, Russia. Why Russia? Because Russia has all the goddamn oil that isn't in the Middle East. Or Venezuela, or up in the shale fields in Canada. Russia has it. Russia! So maybe it's time to start adjusting. The Republicans can't do it. They can't adjust. USA! USA! You know what the second part of that is? USA is in deep crap! Is in deep crap! We really are. And we can get out. I mean, we can come out of this. You know, I'm not talking about, oh, my God, the country's going to disappear. No, it isn't. The society, our culture, no, skip that. Our country, our nation, we're not going to disappear. We're not. But only if we don't adjust and realize some very essential truths. You know, the 20th century was ours. With all the wars and deaths and destructions and tens of millions of people slaughtered in the wars between fascism and so-called democracy, communism and capitalism, all the slaughter that went on, we were still able to maintain our supremacy. It's gone. Now, you know, don't believe it. That's not coming from me. You know, I'm just some half-brained radio talk show host who works at night. But I get this stuff. I filter. I read. I get this stuff. And whether it comes from people smarter than I who listen to this program or columnists for the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, or whatever, or Business Week, that's where the information comes from. And it's out there. It's not in hysterical headlines. The hysterical headlines are about whether or not Sarah Palin boinked her husband's business partner. And that's the way it should be, because America can't handle the truth. Somebody else said that. We can't. Not most of us. So, you know, we raise our hands in church on Sunday and go, oh, we go to the Republican convention and get this vacant look in our faces while some two-bit Alaskan hillbilly stands up there and talks about, well, the only difference between a pig and a whore is me, or whatever the hell she said. I don't even know what she said. I don't care what she said. Soccer mom. No, not soccer mom. That was so 4 years ago. Hockey mom, that's right. Only thing between a hockey mom and a pit bull is lipstick. Ooh, that's wonderful, Sarah. And everybody stands there in this filthy convention with their upturned faces and their signs that say USA and so on and so forth. So Sarah Palin and her hillbilly family, that's the way it should be. That's the stuff that should be on the front page of the New York Times. You're goddamn right. What's the New York Times going to do? Tell the truth? No, they're not. Nor is ABC or CBS or NBC. Or CNN or MSNBC. And certainly not that filthy nest of pigs, Fox. It's not going to happen. If you want the truth, you've got the tool for the truth. It's called your computer. You can find the truth. You can find it. But the truth is pretty simple. American dominance is over. And any politician who's standing up there, I think Barack Obama is starting to see the light a little bit when he talks about, or he was talking about, he would sit down and negotiate with people. It doesn't make any difference what their position is. Yeah, I'll talk to anybody. Now, he's backed away from that because these cretinous Republicans said, oh, you gonna talk to people without, USA, USA, God have mercy. But the Republicans, no. I guess they think that, the battleship in Havana Harbor has been attacked and it's time to invade the Philippines and Cuba and declare war on Spain. You know, it's time for the advent of American empire rather than the ending of American empire. It is over, truth seekers. And again, that doesn't have to be terrible bad news. Jesus God, this economy needs to withdraw a bit. We have our troops in 145 foreign countries. What a drag. The military industrial complex is killing us all. We got so much work to do here at home. You better get used to the idea. And again, it's not coming from me. I'm as much trying to process all this and absorb it as you should be. If you're not already, most of you people are way ahead of me. Yeah, American century, it's over. It's just over. And that doesn't have to be bad.
I want to be just like my president. I want to make more money than I can spend. I want to build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky.
End your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour, Mary in Westchester, Illinois writes, I know it's nitpicky, but according to CNN, their McCain documentary, I think it was called John McCain Revealed, McCain started cheating on wife number one long before he ever met Cindy, and he applied for the marriage license to Cindy before his divorce was final. There's a man with integrity and character. Yeah, that's why this cheesy stuff matters. It does, because if they want the race to be about character, I don't know how Republicans use that term. There's not a Republican with character. The way it was defined to me when I was a kid growing up in the entire party, certainly not in the elected officials. They're scum. They're swine. They're liars. They practice the resentment strategy. Paul Krugman wrote about it in the New York Times today. The resentment strategy. He cites this as an example. Can the super rich former mayor of governor of Massachusetts, that'd be Mitt Romney, the son of a Fortune 500 CEO who made a vast fortune in the leveraged buyout business, can he really keep a straight face while denouncing so-called Eastern elites?
Can the former mayor of New York City, a man who, as USA Today put it, quote, marched in gay pride parades, dressed up in drag, and lived temporarily with a gay couple in their shih tzu, and that was between his second and third marriages, can that guy really get away with saying that Barack Obama doesn't think small towns are sufficiently cosmopolitan? And can the vice presidential candidate of a party that has controlled the White House, Congress, or both for 26 of the past 28 years, a party that Borg-like assimilated much of the D.C. lobbying industry into itself until Congress changed hands, high-paying lobbying jobs were reserved for loyal Republicans, can that party, or can she, that candidate, really portray herself as running against the Washington elite? The answer? Yes, they can. They can. Because that's what Republicans do. That's what the office holders and the office seekers do. They tell the bobbleheads, first they say that Jesus wants you to be rich, that Jesus is not a community organizer, that all the stories you've heard about Jesus and the sermons on the mount and so on and so forth, a bunch of nonsense. Jesus was somebody who wanted his followers to get wealthy and have lots of gold and diamonds and whatever the hell they had back then. Shekels? I don't know what the, you know, that's where they start. They convince these bobbleheads that the Christian religion is not a religion of devotion and service and poverty. I mean, Jesus said it. Sell everything, take up your cross, come follow me, otherwise shut the hell up. No. So they destroy that idea, utterly and absolutely destroy it, and then they convince Republicans that they're being looked down upon by Democrats. Because Democrats, according to the storyline, are smarter, they're more well-traveled, they are more personable, they have better sex. They have brighter children who go to better schools. This is what the Republican rank and file is told. So no wonder they're easy to manipulate. They're constantly being told that they're looked down upon. And this is what Krugman points out in the New York Times today. We'll have this up at the website, too. Do we have this one up? Yeah, we got this one up, I think. What Krugman is writing about, you know, what Bush said in his video presentation the other night, he said that John McCain would stand up to the, quote, angry left, end quote. The angry left? Who in the hell? I mean, I'm angry, and I'm part of the liberal left. I'm angry, but I'm not angry because somebody has more little pretty shiny things than I do. I'm not angry because gay folk can get married. I'm not angry because a woman still has a right to privacy if she wants. I'm angry about that stuff. One of the things I'm angry about, the only thing I'm angry about, is these filthy sons of bitches who are destroying my country. That's what I'm angry about. But as Krugman says, the Republican Party is firmly in the hands of the angry right, which has always been much bigger and much more influential and much angrier than those of us over here on the other side. And he asks, what's the source of all that anger? Well, some of it is driven by cultural and religious conflict. Fundamentalist Christians are sincerely dismayed by Roe v. Wade and evolution in the school curriculum. But It's astonishing how much of the anger these right-wingers feel is based not on the claim that Democrats have done bad things, but on the perception, based on no evidence whatsoever, that Democrats look down their noses at regular people. Oh, my God. Krugman says what the Republican Party is selling, in other words, is the pure politics of resentment. You're supposed to vote Republican to stick it to an elite that thinks it's better than you. Or to put it another way, the GOP is still the party of Nixon. I'll tell you. Krugman says, can it work? Can McCain and Palin really ride this resentment into an upset election victory in what should be an overwhelmingly Democratic year? The answer is a definite maybe. Oh, man. All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to take your phone calls. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Tree hugging, peace loving, pot smoking, porn watching, lazy ass hippies like me.
tree-hugging, love-making, pro-choice and gay wedding, widespread digging hippies like me. Skin color blinded, conspiracy minded, protesters of corporate greed. We who have nothing, and most likely will till we all end up locked up in jail by conservative Christians.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
It's about 26 before the hour. One last thing here. Abraham Lincoln, here's a quote. This is from January 27th, 1838. I'm going to assume it really is a quote from Abraham Lincoln on that district, or on that day. Here's the quote. At what point shall we expect the approach of danger? By what means shall we fortify against it? Shall we expect some transatlantic military giant to step the ocean and crush us at a blow? Never. All the armies of Europe, Asia, and Africa combined, with all the treasure of the earth in their military chest, with a Bonaparte for a commander, could not, by force, take a drink from the Ohio or make a track on the Blue Ridge in a trial of 1,000 years. At what point, then, is the approach of danger to be expected? I answer, if it ever reach us, it must spring up amongst us. It cannot come from abroad. If destruction be our lot, we must ourselves be its author and finisher. As a nation of free men, we will live through all time or die by suicide. End quote. Well, I don't like it. I don't like this crap. I don't like this nonsense. And I got an email from someone who said, well, you know, the truth is that anger is a cover for fear. And I agree with that. I agree with that. Something that I fear, I get angry with because I want to stop the fear. And usually the best way for me to stop my fears, if it is an object, remove the object or smash it. If it's a person, remove the person or kill them. This is real primal, reptilian stuff. It's instinctual, it's survival, it's in our genetic structure. It's there. Get angry, bare your teeth, and go. Get rid of the threat. In order to do that, you got to get very, very angry. But anger has this genesis in fear. And I've also done enough therapy to understand that depression is suppressed anger. So all three, depression, anger, fear, they're all linked. They're all linked. And frankly, I'm tired of it. I am just tired of it. I'm sure you have to do this. If you have situations or little people in your life, you have to become schizophrenic in order to be a good auntie or an uncle or a parent or a grandma or whatever it is that you're doing with little kids, especially, but also not just little kids, other situations, you have to become mildly schizophrenic, split mind. I mean it on a going to the Greek roots of the word, split mind. You've got to have this part of your head over here where you know all this craziness is going on. Over here, you got to maintain a facade, a calmness, a loving attitude, you know, for your kids. I experience this. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But I experience this all the time because I have a 4-year-old. And I know that I've got to shield her from my fear, anger, depression, or rage. Because it's not about her. It's not about her life. It's not about her mom. It's about... And it's really not about
anything that I'm aware of that's internal with me. It has to do with what I see out here and how it scares the hell out of me. And then I get furious. Just absolutely furious. And there's no real safe way to express that kind of anger. So I get depressed. Oh, poor Mikey. but I'm telling you this because this is common stuff. I know I get emails from people. My God, you ought to see these emails. And I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but it's almost like, Dr. Mike, help me, or Father Mike, help me. You know, I understand. I get these emails about, Jesus, I'm consumed with the rage. I find myself depressed all day. I don't know what to, you know, that's what it is. This is what it is. It's that horrible triad of anger, depression, and fear. And it starts with fear. We really are afraid of what these rat bastards have done to our country and are in the process of doing. And they're motivated by the same stuff. I mean, these are not, Ubermenschen. These are not the master race. These are people who are really screwed up. And so they work out their psychodrama. And the rest of us have to sit back and go, oh, Jesus Christ, are they going to start throwing the nuclear bombs today? I grew up with this. Didn't you? If you're over the age of 45 or 50, you grew up with it too. Constant threat. Mutual assured destruction. And it's still there. Don't ever, you know, kid yourself that it's not. That's still hanging. Still there. All right. The therapist has had enough. Let me see. What is this? Let me read this, then we're going to take your calls. We have people online. All right. Mike, I now understand. This is from Joel in Texas. From Tom DeLay's old Texas district. Ah! Mike, I now understand why you get mad as hell, and now I'm mad as hell. I'm 46 years old. I've always voted, but I've never been involved in any specific campaign or given money to any campaign. No more. Obama wasn't my first choice for president, but he's damn sure my guy now. I've just volunteered to work for his campaign locally and made my first financial contribution, which will be the first of many. Joel. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you, Joel. All right. To your phone calls, let's start with Tina. Tina is in Moscow, Idaho, listening on Sirius. Hey, Tina.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Well, I originally called to complain about Palin's interview that you did and how she sounded so much different the next night when she did her speech, and I found out it was Kathy. Good job, Kathy. Yeah, I was hopping mad. I was screaming at the radio. Thanks a lot.
Well, you know, radio used to be, and sometimes still is, theater of the mind. That bit is up on YouTube now. It's up in about three different places on YouTube, and we sat around, had a cup of coffee this morning, and listened to it. And it scared the hell out of us, too.
I know. It sounded so real.
Yeah, she had it nailed.
And
she had it nailed.
She drank the Kool-Aid, you know. I completely fell for it. And I thought, oh, my gosh, if this woman. You know, and I'm from Moscow, and this is where the University of Idaho is.
Yeah.
And she's an alumnus. So, of course, you know, everybody in Moscow is all interested to see, you know, how she's doing and everything. I'm like, oh, please, no. I just hope not, you know. I just hope she doesn't represent us, you know.
Yeah, I hear you.
I know. Well, I just wanted to tell Kathy, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Got me going, and you got my friends going, too. So.
All right, well, Kathy.
It was very entertaining, let me tell you.
Kathy's sitting here with a grin on her face from ear to ear.
Oh, I'm sure she is. Yeah. I'm sure she is, and I can't even imagine the phone calls and emails you got after.
Well,
that.
We're still getting, we got an email, we got several over the past of 48 hours, but I still got one this morning that said, and this is a person who regularly emails the program, and I regularly answer, and he listens, and he said, I've got to ask you, was that really Sarah Palin?
Yeah.
So we're still getting people who are wanting to know if that was a real interview. And as far as I'm concerned, it was real, but only because I am crazy.
Well, I thought it was great, and
well,
I was going to go off, but now I can't, darn it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Tina.
Well, thanks to you for doing such a good show and really representing, you know, real people with real minds and real you know, that haven't drank the Kool-Aid yet.
There you go, or taken the blue pill. Thanks, Tina. I appreciate you checking in. Barb is calling from Cave Creek, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Barb.
Hi. You know, between the anti-Semitic comments in her church that it's okay for the Jews to die, and the watching her on Fox for a second with the military-industrial complex, she went to Kuwait a number of times and they filmed her. This is not a new pick. This woman has been in the, I think she's been primed and ready for this for years. We couldn't find anybody. I think there's something even more insidious. And between the fact that if she, God forbid, becomes president, because he's going to go, McCain, he's way ill, then we have the presidential directive. Mm-hmm. She could just take over as a dictatorship.
Yeah.
With her super far right. What's going on now is so... to me, it's Adolf Hitler in a skirt.
Oh, I hear you.
It is Adolf Hitler in a skirt. She even juts her chin out like him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this girl is studied. I was a theater teacher for 20 years. I watched what I could stand of it, and I watched it as a study, and I was like, wow.
Hey, hold on a second. Let me put you on hold. We'll come back. I got to do a break here. We'll come back and finish up because I want to hear some more of what you got to say. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M.
When there you go, they give you $2 cents out of five. Well, they don't worry about what makes you cry. Your child's in a right. How they gonna die? Gasoline's in short supply. ExxonMobil is barely getting by. With millions in profits, it's just another lie. Hey, don't it make you red state? Hey, don't it...
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Molloy.
Ten before the hour, we're talking with Barb in Cave Creek, Arizona. You know, what you were saying, I don't think we focused on that enough. I've seen the pictures of her. In Kuwait, is that where she was?
Yeah, she goes to Kuwait, which is where most of the military, you know, that's our base.
Yeah,
in Kuwait.
That's the jumping off point. And you know, the thing that intrigued me when she gave her speech, when was it? Wednesday night. Here's a woman allegedly who comes from Wasilla, Alaska, a little small, went to University of Idaho, was mayor, was PTA, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
And she stands up.
She was never in the PTA, but go ahead.
Yeah, stands up in front of 37 million people viewing on television and all those delegates. I don't know how many were there. Surely there must have been 7, 8, 9, 10,000 of them, and doesn't display the least bit of trepidation.
Oh, no, she was totally studied.
Totally, completely. She didn't seem the least bit intimidated by the fact that she was being looked at than more people. I mean, imagine 37 million people watching what you're doing. I can't imagine that.
Well,
so,
the other thing is that she's a trained killer. I mean, she actually hunts, and she's, you know, they're killing wolves by helicopter because the
right.
wolves are killing, you know, are a natural enemy of the moose and the caribou, and she likes to kill caribou.
Right.
I mean, this is a very strange bloodlust, very strange
right.
combination, and I feel like they've put this up. And the other thing that the Democrats, it's like, okay, don't talk about her pregnant teen or her special needs kid. But I would like to talk about the fact that she line-item vetoed special needs out of her budget and
oh, sure.
teen pregnancy out of her budget.
Sure.
If you're going to throw your pregnant kid in my face, you better answer to my ability to have that. I mean, the hypocrisy is typical Republican. But I think it really goes further. I really think she's been primed and ready. I mean, my God, you don't learn a speech in 3 days. I mean, they just picked her last week, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
She knew every word of that speech.
Yeah, it's and now there's a conspiracy on the part of the Republican campaign people to keep her away from the press.
Right.
She has not got interviews scheduled unless it's going to be in very, very, very friendly formats like Sean Hannity maybe on Fox.
Right.
But that's going to be it. I don't know how they're going to handle the Biden debate, she and Joe Biden. I don't.
I can't imagine unless they wire her up the way they wire, you know, they can wire her up with answers.
Well, you make an interesting point, Barb, that this whole thing is not as unplanned and as spontaneous as it seems. This could be the ultimate revenge of these religious right wackos.
Absolutely. This is
you know, to go to McCain, who none of them wanted anyway. When McCain addressed the Conservative Action Committee, whatever the hell it was, in D.C. about 8 or 9 months ago, he was booed.
Well, they're using him. I think that the conservatives, the real right, the fourth Reich, you know, the Nazis, let's say it, have had her in the wings the whole time being trained. I mean, she is absolutely, it blew me away, but I wasn't surprised. And I think we've got to, you know, raise our awareness. This is not the 1960s. This is the 1930s.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. I hear you, Barb. All right, listen, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. Those are excellent points. They're scary as hell, but they're excellent points. Evan is calling from Durham, North Carolina, listening on the internet. Hey, Evan.
Yes, sir. Hey, I've been listening to all of this discussion about talent, and it's starting to occur to me. You know, I was thinking that she might be gone in about a week, also a week or a couple of weeks, or thinking there's no way they could possibly keep this lady on. But actually, you know, the more I've been thinking about it, it seems to me like this idea of, you know, her being under investigation and all of the controversy surrounding her is actually good for her reputation, good for her bona fides, I guess you would say,
mm-hmm.
Because it... This reminds me of these news stories that you come across from time to time, a gangster rapper who was caught on a weapons charge, a weed charge, or in some kind of altercation.
Right.
It reestablishes their rep just in time for an album to come out, just in time for, you know, for some sort of publicity stunt.
Right.
And, you know, that's why I think this is exactly what they want for her. And keeping her away from the press, you know, it helps them to establish her, you know, they're out to get her.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They're out to persecute her. And then you add the religious part next to it. I mean, you know, especially in North Carolina, you think about this. And it's not just the Pentecostal, it's the Baptist too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They will say, well, given everything that we feel about Palin, the only people who could possibly step to her, the only people who could possibly try to bring her down, are people who are being led by, you know, the devil.
Sure, sure.
Basically,
yeah, absolutely. And the other thing too, Evan, the whole. MO on her now is, you know, if the press, if the media questions are too hard, they're already telling Biden to back off, you know, because after all, she's a poor female. And this is the other part that's infuriating to me, and I don't think it comes from fear. I think this is just straight out rage. But the fact that, well, it may be based in fear of the ultimate outcome, but the fact that already, the country is being told anyone who questions this thuggette is going to be guilty of blatant sexism.
And to that I say, you must be out of your goddamn mind. Let me have a chance to question this woman.
Oh. About 7 past the hour. Welcome back to the Malloy program on Nova M Radio. Here's an email from Peoria, Arizona. I'm not going to mention the person's name. Mike, despite the rah-rah of the GOP, the underlying theme... Oh, the subject line says fear. Despite the rah-rah of the GOP, the underlying theme has always been fear. If it isn't 9/11, then it's the Russians. If it isn't the Russians, then it's the black man. I wish Americans knew enough to fear the Republicans and how dangerous they are. I teach government to high school students in Arizona, and I have so much trouble teaching our founding fathers' principles because they no longer exist. How do I teach checks and balances when Congress has been non-existent, where impeachment is off the table, when there have only been one or two vetoes over the past 8 years, and the Supreme Court rarely, if ever, counters the executive dictatorship? How do I teach the rule of law when the president has signing statements exempting himself from the law? How do I teach the Bill of Rights when the First Amendment and free speech is out the window in St. Paul, when the Fourth Amendment has disappeared, the right to a trial and a jury is out, and habeas corpus is not so important? These are the things that we need to fear. We have had a good run for over 200 years. What is that Joni Mitchell song, "You Don't Know What You've Got Till It's Gone"? Welcome to teaching government in 2008. For the first time, I'm telling my students what I believe, and screw neutrality. This is Arizona, so who knows? I might get fired for speaking against McCain. And then the writer's name. But I ain't going to say the name. Let me share this one in the back to your phone calls. Dear Mike, my name is Bradley, age 20, from North Huntington, PA. I have a comment regarding Senator Barack Obama about the supposed lack of support from the white working class. Mike, I listen to all the talking heads like Pat Buchanan and David Gregory on MSNBC. I hear them say to anyone or everyone that Senator Obama has a problem with white working class voters. I don't know how his support is in Erie or Scranton or Wilkes-Barre, but I marched with my grandfather in the Labor Day parade in Pittsburgh, and I swear to you that every union worker, who are working class voters, had on something regarding the senator, from T-shirts with his face on it to putting stickers on their union shirt to holding up Obama signs. The steel workers were also passing out literature to everyone regarding McCain and his anti-union record. I know it's the job of the corporate media and their dancing monkeys to keep it a horse race so they can make more money from higher ratings, but what I hate is when you have blowhards like Chris Matthews say that Obama has a problem with blue-collar workers and that Caribou Barbie Sarah Palin can sway those blue-collar workers and Reagan Democrats to the Republican Party. It's complete BS, and in my opinion, from what I saw down in Pittsburgh at the parade, Obama doesn't have that much to worry about. From Bradley. All right, Bradley, thanks for writing. Back to your phone call. Steve is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. You know, I'd like to direct you. In fact, I sent you the link. There was a Frank Schaefer piece. I don't know if you saw it on Huffington Post. It was Sarah Palin, America's Lipstick Fascist.
I haven't seen that. If you sent me a link,
I did send you a link. It's very powerful because, you know, Frank Schaefer has a story too.
Uh-huh.
You know, he really was one of the sort of, you know, like a founder of the religious right in this country.
And, oh, that's right. Is he the guy that wrote the book? Oh,
He is. He is. And this is...
I had him on the program.
Well, you know what?
Talking about the book he wrote about his parents.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this is, for that, you know, the woman who called from Montana, was it?
Uh-huh.
This is something, I hope she's still listening.
Idaho.
It is a very powerful piece. I highly recommend it. And, you know, I just want to say, I was gonna link, you know, you were talking before about Rudy and multiple choice Mitt, you know, because is he pro-choice or pro-life? Well, he's the first guy who's ever multiple choice. So we, you know, and Barack, but it's a bit much. But I will say this, there is something encouraging, and I don't think that I've heard too much of this. You know, Barack Obama has actually been raising millions and millions of dollars, and
right.
a vast majority of those contributions have been less than $100.
Right.
Okay. So I think there's a factor that's not being weighed in the 1,200 person samples that make up the Gallup or the Zogby
mm-hmm.
or any of these other polls. And, you know, it goes with what that gentleman who was in Pittsburgh emailed you with, you know, the union support
right.
that he saw on the streets of Pittsburgh
mm-hmm.
because, you know, John McCain is no friend of the working man. And, you know, I always wondered why when there's a giveaway of hundreds of billions of dollars to the very wealthiest people in the United States, that's a tax cut. And if you want to raise taxes on those people by 2 or 3 percentage points,
mm-hmm.
and they're still going to be incredibly wealthy, and they have tax attorneys who are offshoring all their damn money anyway, why that's class warfare?
Yeah,
you're
really.
Not the only one who's angry, Mike. I'm just, you know, trying to help you out here because, you know.
I hear you loud and clear, Steve.
I can't imagine that you didn't.
This is what Paul Krugman was writing about today in the New York Times, and I really recommend that you get it online if you don't subscribe to the Times. This is exactly what he was writing about, the politics of resentment, how no matter how much Republicans, and not just the office holders, but just mainstream Republicans, no matter how much they cheat and steal and take and mock community organizers, that's the latest thing. You know, you stupid community organizer, which is just another code word for a person of color or some socialist. When in fact, community organizers, let's see, I guess that would include people that work for the Red Cross and the Salvation Army and you know, but never mind. But when you have, when the fact exists that Republicans, the rank and file Republicans, will do anything to maintain their willful ignorance, they will do anything to maintain this attitude that you know, there's somebody somewhere having a good time and it's not them. I lost my train of thought. It doesn't matter. Christ, I'm starting to feel like McCain. I appreciate you checking in. Larry writes in, Mike, I'm 70 in good health, financially fairly secure, but lately I've been not feeling well. My BP is up, and I have what I diagnose as low-level chronic depression and just plain fear, and it's all because of the dangerous situation our country's in. If McCain wins, I have no doubt Palin will off him if he doesn't keel over on his own or descend within a few months into a vegetable. I don't have enough money to leave the country, but if nukes fly, I guess it won't make any difference, Larry. Yeah. That's just so... This whole thing is just... It's becoming more than just, oh, let's make smarmy comments about this trailer trash from... And no offense to people who live in mobile homes. Yeah, it's just an expression, like uppity. this hillbilly, no offense to hillbillies, it's just an expression. From Alaska, it's more than what it appears to be. And I agree with the caller from Idaho. This could very well be the ultimate revenge from the religious right. They don't like McCain. They hate McCain. McCain is way too liberal for these religious crazy people. And now you have this woman. You know that YouTube video that's out where she's addressing the members of the church, and she talks about the Master's Commission. Do any of you know what the Master's Commission is? She's talking about those young people. I'll tell you what. If you don't know about it, go to just use the search engine, look up Master's Commission plus Alaska, and you will probably get their homepage. I was brought up in the Christian faith, and it never occurred to me how insane these people really are.
You go to Arizona, for example, you can't find the border. And it's just desert. It is like wide open desert.
Stolen from Japan. Excuse me? From around the world. You can't find a border. This is from Mike in Diamond Bar, California. He writes, Mike, first let me say I enjoy listening to your show as often as I can on Sirius. After spending these last 2 weeks watching the DNC and the RNC, I have to put an end to the comments by some people out there that try and argue that there is no difference between the two parties other than name only. Wrong. After watching the RNC this week, I have seen a party that used to be represented by great names like Jefferson and Lincoln turn into the morally bankrupt party of Bush, Cheney, McCain, Palin, and many others. They lie through their teeth with that blank-eating grin about how they care for the little man while they send their jobs overseas and give the owners a tax break for doing so, all the while laughing and making fun of the community organizers who are working hard to help the little guy get back on his feet. I can only hope that this convention showed those undecided voters out there that this party has been taken over by a bunch of religious freaks hell-bent on turning America into their own version of the Taliban-ruled Afghanistan, and hypocrites who don't give a blankety-blank-blank-blank about the little man. Anyone out there who wants to say that the two parties are no different better go back and watch these two conventions over again. If we fail to act and fight these people, and allow McCain and Palin to take over, I fear that America will have to be taken back, not by the ballot box, but by the ammo box. Mike. Back to your phone calls here. Charlene is calling from Gilbert, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Charlene, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I was telling your screener that I'm a registered nurse, and when I was looking at McCain last night, man, that swelling on his face to me looks like it's getting worse.
I wish someone would explain to me, and I'm not asking you to do this, but what exactly that is.
You know, I'm not sure. I've lived out here on and off for 20 years, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I can't tell you, I don't understand what the heck happened when they removed all that cancer, but I think his face, it would be interesting to hear from some of your other nurse listeners, but I think that swelling is getting worse, and all I can say is be bewy, bewy, afwey.
Yeah. Well, it looks very fearful to me too. I mean, I look at that and I just think to myself,
What would I do if I had that? I don't know if it's dead tissue or scar tissue inside where they removed something, though, that would be removed that would leave that huge of a mass.
Well, you know, some people get that what they call keloid scarring, which is
right.
That real hard, bumpy scarring.
Right.
But I can't believe that, you know, he'd have that much scarring and nobody's done anything about it. You know, they have some of the best health insurance around.
Yeah.
So.
Unless it's a situation that nothing can be done about.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Be belly afraid.
Yeah, okay. All right.
I'll let you go.
Thanks, Charlene.
All right, bye.
All right, appreciate you checking in. Robin is calling from San Diego, listening on Sirius. Hey, Robin.
Hey, Mike.
How are you?
It's nice to have a live show here in San Diego. You know, they took our Air America away. It was doing too much good.
I know.
And then I don't have to tell you what's on in the morning in Sirius, but anyway, it's nice to hear you tonight, Mike.
Well, good. Thank you.
I heard you ask, I don't know, rhetorically or not, but, you know, how will they handle the debate once she has to actually talk to Joe Biden or somehow stand side by side with him? And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't even know. But what I think they'll do is what they did with her speech, which personally I watched, which I can't believe I did. Somebody wanted to watch it, so I did,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was a horrible speech. I mean, I'm not a speaker, a public speaker or anything, so I don't know about that part. But she was just mean and nasty and bitter and cruel. And
oh, you're right. You're absolutely right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the audience was hateful and laughed at, like, eighth graders and... And the next day, she was the queen of Egypt. I mean, she just did everything perfectly. And that's exactly what they'll do after she debates Biden, is they'll disparage him in every way they can, and they'll say she held her own, which, you know, low expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And the country will hear that she did great in the debate.
Yeah, I have a feeling that you're being very predictive here, that you're absolutely right. I look at the way... The commentariat, I guess is what they're called now, all these talking heads on television, the way they have talked about her speech the other night. And I just sit here and think to myself, what were you people watching? You weren't watching the same thing I was watching. Hey, hold on a second. You want to hold on?
Sure, I'd love to. Thanks.
All right, let me put you on hold, Robin. We'll come back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. We were talking with Robin in San Diego, listening on Sirius. All right, about Palin, the next day, after all that ugliness, all that spewing out, all that hatred and insulting stuff. And yeah, she gets a pass. You expect it from the people that were at that convention because that's how they got to the convention. Because they are the type that would appreciate that kind of nastiness. But to watch people like David Gregory on MSNBC and Pat Buchanan, and I realize these people are probably just as bad, but they're supposed to be journalists, aren't they?
Well, I think they're counting on people not remembering what that means anymore.
Yeah.
Because now, then they went in that whole blame the media thing, and people are like, oh, yeah, it's the media. That's the problem. And so now they've backed off, and she's leaving town for, like, what, 2 weeks or something? She's going to be unavailable for interviews?
Nothing has made me angrier than, first of all, the hands-off attitude that so much media in this country seem to have, but secondly, how easy they are to be intimidated, and third, how the Republicans have blamed everything on media when it's the media's job. It's a journalist's job. It's a television reporter or a radio reporter's job to slash and burn these sons of bitches.
It used to be.
It should still be by definition,
right.
But they have become nothing but a class of high paid whores, nothing against sex workers, but that's what they have become.
Well, I love Rachel Maddow and everything, but she was on the Today Show the next day, that morning, after Palin. And she was like, hey, it was a great speech. I mean, she was being magnanimous or whatever, and she threw in a couple, you know, it was a little bitter and a little bit sarcastic. And that whoever the woman is now on the Today Show, what? You thought it was? And Maddow backed down, and that was it. They never came back to her. So even Rachel Maddow, who we all know knows how to say what's on her mind, was muted on her now new network. And it's like, well, if that's what she's going to be, then she should go back to, you know, just be on Air America. And I don't know. I'm a little disheartened today in the fact that, you know, and I did not watch John McCain's speech, and I also do not believe for a second that almost 40 million people did. I just do not believe it. I think that's made up.
Well, but you know, I think it's probably right. I know I was one, Kathy and I represent two of the almost 40 million. A lot of people were watching it because it's a freak show. You know, just because you watch something, I don't think means that, oh boy, this is wonderful. I love this. But I think there were probably 25 million people who watched this just to see how bizarre it would become. Because there is no interest in Republicans this year, none, because of what they've done to this country in the past 8 years.
Boy, I hope you're right.
I hope I'm right, too. But I think people turn on the television to watch this because it's an absolute, and everybody knows, this is insane. When you have Lindsey Graham up there screaming with his red face, when you have Giuliani up there, when you have Mitt Romney. Oh.
Did you hear the one? Somebody, I can't remember who it was, and he started a chant about, yes, we will. It was before McCain, before Palin, I guess. I can't even remember. And anyway, he got the crowd going with, will we have, you know, whatever all their promises, whatever they're trying to promise. And then the audience was chanting back, yes, we will. And it was like, what? I mean, they're just stealing everything away from Obama.
I know. And, oh, well. Yeah. I'm sorry, Robin, I lost you there for a second. Go ahead. Robin?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, I lost you for a second.
Oh, that's okay. I was just, and then nobody has mentioned, you know, I've heard a few people say he's trying to steal back the mantle of change, but I heard one of them interviewing Axelrod today, and he said, you know, this is the guy that doesn't have anything to offer, you know, for change.
Right, right.
And she immediately went to, yeah, but Barack Obama has no experience. Palin has more experience than him, and Axelrod was just dumbfounded.
I could just really slap across the mouth somebody in media who says that Palin has more experience at anything than Barack Obama. People can look at Barack Obama as just a Republican light, look at him any way you want, but that kind of a statement is not only incorrect, it's asinine, and what is infuriating is how many people in media have picked up that meme and are repeating it so that people around the country now are saying the same thing. Hey, Robert.
Well, Axelrod, let me just finish. He was truly, you could see that in his face that he was like, I can't even, like he couldn't really answer her because he was just like, what? I mean,
I know,
and he was stuck. But anyway, thanks for taking my call, Mike.
All right, Robin. All right, thank you. Take care. Good to hear from you. Lloyd is calling from Charlotte, North Carolina, listening on Sirius. Hey, Lloyd.
How you doing, man?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing okay. This is my first time listening to your show. I was searching. I'm a huge sports fan, but right now I can't concentrate on sports because we got something bigger going on here.
I hear that.
We got to get those Republicans out. We got to get them out.
Absolutely.
My question is, why are we heckling this woman with these gloves on? You can't say anything to her. You can't attack her. I watched Hillary Clinton. I love Hillary. I love Hillary, but I watched her get attacked from both sides during the primaries. They were beating her to death. They were beating her to death. So why are they holding this woman to another standard? I don't understand that.
Well, I don't either, except the quick explanation would be because in television, all these talking heads on television took a lot of flack from Democrats, Hillary supporters, and from the right wing, kind of put media, especially television, on the defensive. Now that they have a real brain-dead, in terms of political experience, jerk up there, they're terrified. The talking heads on television are terrified to expose her for what she is. I guess. I mean, I don't know. The other answer, the other quick answer, Lloyd, is because this woman is a Republican. And even though most Democrats are nothing more than Republican light these days, this woman is a Republican. And corporate America, which certainly includes media, television, radio, and most newspapers, corporate America is by its nature, by definition, more to the right than they are to the left. You ever notice something when you pick up your paper? I don't know if I'm sure this is true of the Charlotte Observer. You live in Charlotte? Okay, Charlotte Observer, Atlanta Journal-Constitution, New York Times, doesn't make any difference. You open up the paper, you go through these sections, and there's a business section. Why
right.
isn't there Why isn't there a labor section? You see
right,
what I'm saying?
Right, I see what you're saying.
So,
it's mind-boggling to me how they're handling this woman. And I thought it was to be. I don't know if anybody else noticed, but it was disgusting to me how they passed that little the little baby with Down syndrome. How they passed her, passed him or her around
until the littlest kid winds up being a babysitter. Yeah, I hear you.
They use that baby as a prop. They use that baby as a prop to try to win over, you know, get sympathy and all. You know, they all about family. Yeah, they all about family. All right, rich families. They don't care nothing about the little man like myself. You know, get on the virus.
I hear you. All right, listen, Lloyd, I'm glad you found the program. Don't forget where we're located on Sirius. And call in any time, pal. Appreciate it. Sanchez is calling from Montbello, California, listening on the Internet. Hey, Sanchez.
Señor Molloy, muy buenas noches to you, sir.
Back at you.
Gracias. I need to ask Kathy. I know she's not a licensed nurse, but I have a serious, serious case of the heebie-jeebies. I've had it since I saw Bush make that comment about the angry left. And
well, I can tell you what to do. Take two bottles of Jack Daniels and call us in the morning.
I'm going through my Patron here in a few minutes, man. I'm on Reposado right now, so that's my drug of choice tonight.
Okay, well, that's a good one.
Yeah, but I cannot tell you. I've been searching, desperately searching for the words. Oh, and by the way, you need to enter last night's first hour, the 6 to 7 o'clock hour there, into the Molloy time capsule, because it was classic. You perfectly voiced what it is I'm feeling about the corporate media, the identification of anybody who was protesting, exercising our First Amendment, free speech rights, now being called anarchists. What is that all about? And I got to tell you, I wasn't going to let loose with this, but one of the so-called progressive hosts here in Los Angeles, the dude that follows you on KTLK, which unfortunately isn't on right now, but that guy even equated protesters, every single protester, including Amy Goodman, as an anarchist.
Right. Well, just because somebody calls himself a progressive doesn't mean anything. Look at Ed Schultz. I know who you're referring to.
I know.
And I worked with him here in Atlanta years and years and years ago, and frankly, I think he's insane.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, just what I don't get into a pissing contest though with skunks because you know you lose.
I know,
but
well,
I know who you mean.
Yes,
I know.
Well, there were so many things to discuss this week, including what's going on in with Russia, Georgia, and Cheney's visit. And then you didn't even touch on. There were so many things this week, but I know that it got passed over. But I'm still in a quiet, seething state of boiling at the moment because we're being identified as the angry left. All of a sudden, voices of dissension are going to be categorized as one thing. Independents, Democrats.
Hey, hold on a second.
Okay, Mike.
Just hold on right there. Stay there. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
on a secret list. He was taking away with his laptop, and as he left, he called out to me.
It's 10 before the hour, thanks to Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, our technical staff, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, and Bridget Wolf, our non-technical contributors, and the executive producer of this program, Kathy Bay. We're talking with Sanchez in Montebello. Okay, where were we?
Well, we were discussing the angry left, and you were about tell me something about that.
I was?
Yes, about the anarchists, everybody being identified as one thing, the angry left.
Yeah, we talked about it the other night. And, yes. And again, I know the talk show host you're referring to,
yes.
And I think he's at the end of his career, and he's desperate to try to make a name for himself, so
yeah.
He comes up with crap like that. That's,
yeah.
You know, and no point in calling his name.
Yes.
But the anger, if there is anger in the left, it is certainly justified, and like... the email I read tonight, anger is the result of fear. I don't
mm-hmm.
disagree with that at all.
Mm-hmm.
But fear can be a great motivator to get things done. If you're mm-hmm. if you're fearful of the monsters outside your house, you go out and kill the monsters, and then you don't have to be afraid anymore. And I guess you have to be really pissed off to pick up a weapon and go kill the monsters, even though the original thought was fear. They're going to come in my house and eat me and eat my children. So,
oh, geez.
Yeah. So, well, you know, go back to Beowulf. Go back to the original epic poem about Grendel and Beowulf and how Beowulf had to deal with the monster that lived out in the forest that would come in and eat people until finally, Beowulf killed the monsters. So,
yeah. Well, can you understand as far as like other great literature, as far as Orwell is concerned, George Bush up on the screen addressing the audience and identifying us as the angry left, equating us with the people, the North Vietnamese torturers of McBush. That raises such an alarming level to me. And yeah, there's certain people that are covering it right now, but that, and again, identifying everybody who exercises their patriotic and First Amendment rights, calling us all anarchists. And the other thing, I was at a peace meeting last night.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be very careful. I mean, I'm still speaking my mind, but they infiltrated the Eyewitness, a gathering of people that were protesting in St. Paul. Beware of infiltration, man. I mean,
it's the oldest trick in the book,
yes.
and the infiltrators learned how to do this very well back in the 60s and 70s, and they passed it on. Sanchez, I got to leave it there.
Okay, man, have a good night.
All right, you too. Take care. Irish Dave writes in regarding voters for Hitler. Well, you know, Hitler never effected a coup. He was voted into office and then appointed by the appointed chancellor. But Irish Dave writes, Mike, did you know that in the Weimar Republic, Hitler did best with Catholic women when he ran for office? He did best with Catholic women. Those darn Germans gave out color-coded ballots. They were color-coded by gender. Irish Day, P.S. The first government-sponsored anti-smoking campaign in the modern era? Yeah, it was the Uber Alles boys. How about that? Well, Hitler was a vegetarian too, right, huh? Yeah? Women, the women voters in the Weimar Republic, I wasn't aware of that, but Irish Dave, like Prairie 2, is usually right on the money, so okay. Back to your phone calls. We got time? Yeah, we got time. Anthony is calling from Dallas, listening on Sirius. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Doing real good. First-time caller. I've caught you on late a couple times and wanted to call. Really enjoy your show.
Well, thanks. Hope you're going to stick around and, you know, listen. Tell your friends.
Yeah. Definitely. Listen, one of the things I wanted to point out, and I don't see if you kind of what your thoughts were. I was listening to the news media right before, the Republican convention.
Yeah.
They had made the comment that actually that McCain really wanted to pick Lieberman as his vice president.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
But what they said was that there would be basically kind of a, I guess, anarchy or revolt, you know, on the floor, and people would walk out. And
yeah, I read there were five states who made it very clear that their delegates would suggest a alternative slate of candidates if McCain did that, simply because Lieberman is pro-choice and he's in favor of gun control and a few other so-called liberal issues, and they were going to have none of that. So
exactly, and you know, the thought that I, and knowing, I guess, to my point, knowing McCain's history and I guess kind of this mean streak kind of I'm going to do it my way or no
right.
way. I think that what he did was instead of, since he couldn't pick who he wanted,
mm-hmm.
I think what he did in a sense was kind of thumb his nose at the Republicans and say, look, since I can't have what I want, then, you know, you guys are not going to get what you want. So he could virtually, you know, by default, you know, really tank, you know, the election. Because at this point, you know, you go from picking, you know, having way more experienced candidates,
mm-hmm.
you know, Tom Ridge and you know, the likes of those guys, and you go to somebody that's virtually a no-name, no unknown.
I hear, well, there's a lot of theories floating around, Anthony, and that certainly has as much possibility as any of these other theories. I hear you. I think that he was forced to pick Palin. Anthony, don't be a stranger. Call in once in a while, pal. We're out of time. Got to go. I'll see you all Monday. I'll be on CNN Monday afternoon between 3 and 4 Eastern time, so if you got the stomach, tune in. Have a nice weekend. Take care. Keep it lit. Oh, and have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.